Hi, this is Susanna and James Forbes from Little Pomona Orchard and Cidery.
And you are listening to Cider Chat.
Episode 126. Hello and welcome to Cider Chat. My name is Rhea Windcaller, and I am the producer and cider MC of this weekly podcast, where we speak with makers, cider enthusiasts, and folks within the cider trade from around the world. And this week, we are speaking to the folks behind the cidery known as Little Pomona, based in the United Kingdom in West Country. That's out to the west of London, and we are so delighted to have both James and Susanna Forbes on this here podcast. So we're going to be coming up to that chat in just a moment, but first, some news out and about in Ciderville. Oh, I am so happy to announce that the Totally Cider Tour to...
Excuse me, Rhea, I think we're going to talk about Adam Reed from New Zealand first.
That's right, Rhea. Adam sent a photo in of a quince or quinces ready to go into cider, I believe.
Yeah, definitely. We should go with that. Last couple of days, we got that photo from Adam Reed, who's been sending us amazing photos of quinces.
Indeed. Of course, I never met a quince that I didn't like.
Me too, Mr. Quince. And he's been kind of sharing his little tale there. And of course, New Zealand is in the southern hemisphere, so they are in the middle of picking palms or past.
I sure would like to see some medlars from New Zealand too.
Yeah, that would be pretty neat because medlars do grow in New Zealand also. So if anyone has some photos, whether you're in New Zealand or somewhere else around the world where the medlars are ripening right now and you're going to have them blet, which means that they ripen from the inside out to that perfect, delectable quality of taste, do send them our way and we will share them with Ciderville.
That sounds great, Rhea.
And again, thank you, Adam.
Yes, sirree. And all this came through the Cider Chat Facebook page. So if you want to join that, it's open. It's easy to do. There's lots of ways to join us on social media, Twitter, and Instagram, we're at Cider Chat, Ciderville. Twitter, it's at Cider Chat. And I should say, if Perry Pear was here right now, he is out, I think, checking out the new grafting of the Perry Pear trees.
I think I heard you all. I'm here right now. I know you're not going to do the podcast without me, are you?
Oh, these pears.
Of course not, Perry Pear. Take your seat, sit down, and let's get this show going, okay? We got some other things to talk about, too, including the Totally Cider Tour to Normandy.
Ah, yes, Normandy, where Perry Pears reign. And I suppose that people also like cider there, too. I didn't happen to miss the piece, though, on Little Pomona in the UK, did I?
No, Perry, not yet.
Okay, Palms, can we move on with the show now? Because everybody wants to hear that too. So if we're ready to go, let's take it from here, take a little music break, and then we're going to go into the Totally Cider Tour, okay?
Roger that, Rhea. Counting 1, 2, 3.
Some other big news. There is now a, I guess like a little mini me. It's called Cider Chat Live. It's a podcast that allows me to do really almost like spontaneous recordings. You're going to be able to call in and everything. I haven't totally figured it all out, but the first episode is up. It is on iTunes, and I'm doing it via an app called Anchor, which lets everybody be a podcaster. I'm super stoked to bring to you this week the Boston Homebrew Competition. I'll be there podcasting and then uploading immediately. So this main show is still going to be on, where we are a little bit more heavily produced. And then that other Cider Chat Live is really unplugged, unscripted, living on the dangerous side of shenanigans. But that's the way it goes in the Cider House. So you could check it out. You could go to, right now, you could go to iTunes, and you could even say to Siri, "Hey Siri, play podcast Cider Chat Live," and bonk, it'll come up. You want to subscribe to it if you want to be getting these updates. I will be posting it to the Facebook page and to social media. It's also right now available on Pocket Cast and Radio Public, and will soon be uploading to all the other podcast directories. So this is something that I'm doing. I'll be taking along when, after the Boston Homebrew Competition, I'll shortly be heading out to GlenCap, the Great Lakes International Cider and Perry Competition held in Grand Rapids, Michigan. And that is going to be podcasted too. So don't miss out. This is going to be fun. I don't know where it will lead me, but a lead it will go. And because I'm doing it via this app, they add commercials, which I have nothing to do with. So I hope they're good. I hope they're enjoyable. Again, this new podcast is called Cider Chat Live. It's time now to go with our featured chat with Little Pomona. The makers came over from the UK to CiderCon 2018 in Baltimore. And when I heard that Susanna and James Forbes were going to be at CiderCon, I just said, you know, we have to chat. They're just delightful people. I knew that Susanna has been a craft beer writer, a cider writer for years now, and had really been following her social media. You could check that out at Drink Britain. I didn't know a lot about James, but he comes from a pretty interesting background too, which so fits well with cider. And the two of them coming together are really producing some watch your, you know, chart for cider, because these folks are putting it on the map on a different level that we typically see for cider. So stay tuned for that. If you get a chance to get their ciders, and there'll be info on where you can find it, definitely get it. I'm very excited for them. So without further ado, make sure you have a full glass, or if you're driving, keep your eyes on the road and your hands upon the wheel. And for all you bike riders out there, well, enjoy the ride. We're going to hang out now with some fantastic people. Both, again, Susanna and James Forbes of Little Pomona, based in Bromyard in the UK. Just so super stoked to see you, meet you, and to hear your story. I think Herefordshire. That's kind of like a county, isn't it?
Yep. Yeah, it's one of the biggest counties in England. And one of the least populous counties as well. So it's big and there's not many people there.
But there's lots of trees.
There's lots
and
of trees.
There's a wonderful heritage. So we actually moved there from near London. And it was because we got entranced by the apple. And we felt there was something that we could do with it as well. So it took a few years to find a little orchard. But the community there is so welcoming that we just kept going. And then we found one.
Wow. Yeah. So when did you actually move to that region?
We found the place in late 2014. That's when we bought the property.
Kind of recent.
So we've only been there. This is our fourth year, yeah.
Have you primarily been city dwellers or country folk? Because those are two different ranges.
City dwellers.
Yeah. Oh, interesting. Yeah. Oh, okay.
So we moved from close to London, a place called Epsom, which is famous for Epsom salts. So it's got a suburb of London.
And Epsom Derby.
So that's why you seem so relaxed, because you have that kind of Epsom salt background,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Do people take advantage of that quite often, the Epsom salt scene? Or
well, we I don't know. I've It's a thing I know, but I'd never tried it or taken it, so I don't know.
We moved there because of the Epsom Downs, which is Rye Epsom Racecourse, so people might know of the Epsom Derby. And it's quite amazing. So we're in Tattenham Corner, which is a village which is named after a bend in the racecourse. So it's really nice. But there's so when we began and when we got a bit interested, we were scrumping for apples. So, you know, we were kind of our friends in their garden. And then we were looking around. There were some on the outskirts of the golf course near there.
The first ciders we made, we foraged everything, basically, so including the bottles. We foraged them from recycling bins and stuff. So it was a kind of really
Classic. Yeah. I mean, a lot of people do that, so they could really relate to that. You want to just try it, and you use the resources that you have.
Yeah.
That's the way of the non-commercial maker.
Yeah, yeah.
So how long ago was that?
And I think the first time, about 6 years ago, we started the first experiments of making cider. And then I did a couple of courses with Peter Mitchell, and by that time, because we didn't have the kind of clear idea that right now, we woke up one day and like, now we're going to move to Herefordshire and make cider, but it crystallised out of a lot of things that were kicking around at the time. Cider was one of them, and I think when we visited Herefordshire and we met kind of some of the cool people there, like Tom Oliver and Simon Day from Once Upon a Tree, and
Mike Johnson
from Ross on Wye Cider, the whole thing began to kind of become clearer, and that's when we decided that we really wanted to find somewhere out there.
It's very inspiring.
Was it an easy move from the city to the country, or was there some kind of a learning, you know, curve for you?
I think there's a little bit of adjustment because you know, in the city you're close to everything, and
no takeout like in the same way, or do you get delivery?
No.
We're a bit remote, I mean, we're about 10-15 minute drive from the nearest town, nearest store or anything like that. But I think we got used to it pretty quickly.
We have an orchard dog and a cider cat, so they love it out there. And just waking up and looking out the window, and it is amazing. And there's something about Herefordshire. If anyone hasn't been there, do go. We're on the border with Wales. Sometimes people confuse us with Hertfordshire, which is near London. We are not Hertfordshire, but in Herefordshire, there is something about the skies. They're just absolutely beautiful. You get the most amazing sunsets and sunrises. So you have an amazing sort of feeling when you're there.
Is it flat land or hilly, rolling hills?
It's got a rolling hills, it's a county where there's not great extremes, so there's no big mountains. Great valleys or anything like that, but it's just kind of lush and green and undulating, and it's really pretty as well. And the seasonal changes are very lovely to watch as well, as the colours change, and it's very agricultural, so the landscape is changing as the farmers are doing stuff on the fields. And so it's really interesting throughout the year to watch that.
How easy was it to step into an area where there is a lot of very fine cider makers, and being a startup cidery in the midst of somebody like Tom Oliver, who's like, you know, quote unquote world renowned cider maker, influential cider maker of the year or whatever, for what he's doing? It's just incredible, you know. And you have the cider museum there. You have a really, it's steeped in the history of cider making. How was that for you?
I think that was part of the attraction, and it was definitely part of the attraction, and it is that community, and that's what's enabled us to make cider. And Tom has been a complete inspiration, and we feel very proud to sort of look on him as a mentor. So early days, when you've got your little hassles that crop up, you solve most of them, but then there's other times you just have to pick the phone up. And it's people like him, and then Simon Day, who we've mentioned also, Once Upon a Tree, great person who they don't mind the simple questions, and then sometimes you meet up. So It was that reason that made us think we could move and have a go at it, because we do not have a background. We're not fourth generation orchardists. Mm-hmm. We're not mm-hmm. naturally like that, but we want to learn. As a journalist, I love to chat mm-hmm. and I love to ask people questions, and then people give you the time. Mm-hmm. So I also volunteered just for a few days at Ross on Wye Cider during the harvest season, and Mike Johnson just shares with you in such a gentle way, and you go and see, and you go and the first time you go and pick a 300-year-old Perry pear tree, yeah. and there's almost a ton of fruit, and you've got to go that day. That's the day the word mm-hmm. comes. So you all get into the little truck. And you're all there, and you're on your knees, and it's all damp grass and everything like that. But the scent, and you're on a slope because that's where it might be. But you bring in, and then you see what happens to it. So it's fulfilling.
Yeah, I bet it is. Kind of a eye-opening too about the amount of work it takes from the fruit to the glass.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
I know you took a course here. But, you know, it's kind of like the saying, you can't grow corn out of a book, right? You can't do that. So as much as you take a course, until you get out there and do it, was that surprising to you or a little? It's hard work.
I think, yeah, it's harder work than you imagine initially, because we were experimenting at home doing the kind of small-scale stuff. But mm-hmm. when you scale it up, it is hard physical work as well. Mm-hmm. You're lifting mm-hmm. heavy crates of apples around, and mm-hmm. you know, you're standing in the cold and the wet, and it's kind of yeah. But it's great fun. At the same time, doing
it is, and then the most amazing thing is when you share your ciders, and when you start with them at a tasting, and then obviously not everyone's going to like them. Our ciders are intentionally dry. We ferment all the way through. Except for we were very lucky. We had a spontaneous keyed cider. So,
a spontaneous keyed cider. Okay,
absolutely.
And you're pointing at your bottles.
I am.
You have two beautiful bottles in front of us. I'm going to take a photo while I'm talking here. We'll get these show notes for the two of you up there. Boom. A 750 mil, and that's like a 500.
I would say.
Yeah. Beautiful label.
Thank you.
I want you to open it, but I want you to just, if we could just talk about the label and the name first, because it's
yeah, oh God, that
sweet.
Took a long time, the whole thing. Because basically, 2015 was our first harvest, so we got everything into tank, and then we had a kind of, it was 18 months before we released the first cider, so we had, you know, kind of 18 months to, we'd already been thinking about the name and not getting anywhere, so it took a long time to come up with it. But I think the name came from the fact that we're small, so little, and Pomona, we kind of like the connotations of the goddess Pomona. Mm-hmm. We put the two together, and mm-hmm. little Pomona is a kind of reminds me of a Ramones song. I'm a big Ramones fan.
Okay.
There's one called Ramona.
All right.
So, and I was humming that one day, and I was thinking about Pomona, Ramona, little Ramona, Pomona, and that's how it came about.
Mm-hmm.
So then, and at the same time, we had an idea for a female character to kind of represent the brand.
Mm-hmm.
So Pomona in classical artwork. Mm. Is always depicted as kind of topless and blonde.
Mm.
We didn't kind of want that sort of imagery, so we went for we wanted a kind of more a female but with some attitude. And then we had to find an illustrator to bring that to life, and that took a long time. And actually, it was a guy called Thomas Ascott, who's an illustrator in Florida.
So we Florida.
Found him.
Wow.
Online googling different things, and this couple of images came up, and I really like them, and
yeah,
so we reached out to him, and he was really open to
doing it. It's a little bit like a folk art in a way,
yeah,
because it she has a strong presence. So this is a woman. She has like a little scarf around her head that has like the moon and the stars.
Yep.
And she's she's moving forward, going forward, and holding. Is that, can I see like an apple there?
It's a big apple.
Yeah, she just has this beautiful, determined presence, but there's a certain coziness to it that I've always been attracted to, and I love the name Little Pomona. And I just want to tell you right now, the Talking Palms really love the name Little Pomona, too.
Cool. Thank you.
That's for another day. I just want to translate to you that they're very
cool.
happy
Thank
to hear that.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, it's a really nice presentation. So you have these two bottles of cider. What do we have here?
Well, we've got, first one is, do you want to try them?
Yeah.
Shall we do it? Yeah.
Yes.
Let me think.
Want to try cider?
Yes. Shall we start with the...
Yeah, let's start with, first one is called Old Man and the Bee. It's from 2015, and it's a still dry cider. Technically dry. Mm-hmm. It's called Old Man and the Bee because the orchard was planted by an old farmer called Mark Murray, so it's kind of named in his honour. Mm-hmm. Bees that pollinate the trees and other insects. Mm-hmm. And it's a blend of all the apple varieties we have in the orchard. It's got a little Pomona in a glass.
Pomona in a glass, that's right. Wow.
And those four varieties are Dabinet, Harry Masters Jersey, Foxwell, and Ellis Bitter. And they're roughly equal proportions in here.
And we're looking at a very, not super deep amber, but just, you know, medium amber color to it, a little petulant, you know. I just thank you so much for bringing this cider all the way across the Atlantic, because I lust after UK ciders. I just love, you know, the flavor of a UK cider, so I'm really very happy.
Oh, good.
Well, we're really thrilled to be here, and actually it's a good time for us to say how much we have enjoyed Cider Chat over the years. Yeah. And I'm not kidding, when you're out there and you're picking the apples, what do we have on the old headphones? Cider Chat. So you've been with us along the way.
Yeah.
So it's very true. And another thing about being in Herefordshire and rural, you might be driving a long way, so what do you have? You can have the radio, lovely, or you can have a podcast.
Now you're gonna make me cry.
Is we've absolutely adored being here at CiderCon. It's been just the most amazing time, and so we're seeing some of our heroes that have inspired us from over here, and then we find ourselves saying we heard you on Cider Chat. And you know, so it's really fun.
Wow.
You're helping bring the person to life. And so we do feel there's a world of cider.
Mm.
And it's so much better because we are thousands of miles apart, but cider is bringing us together.
Right, we all have this one passion. Well, that's very kind of you.
Shall we do a wassail?
Wassail, yeah.
Why not?
Sure.
Wassail.
Wassail. Cheers.
Mm.
So Old Man and the Bee, everything was fermented and matured.
It's actually a still cider. So it's actually a still cider. So I want to just, can I just talk about it a little bit, what I'm getting before you go to it?
Please do.
You might have a different perception. And so for Ciderville listening, again, the presentation of the bottle, the branding, beautiful. You feel like the heart of the people that are making it, James and Susanna here. So I didn't quite know what to expect, and there's these tannin complexities coming in. So you're going to get it kind of, that it's a dry cider, so it really clears the palate, which then opens up your taste buds, and you get to sit in with those different apples that James was mentioning that's in here. So this is would be a perfect pairing with food to really open that up, because cider should always be, I feel, drunk with food, you know, or consumed with food. And really, I feel like I'm kind of like hanging out in the orchard here. And that's really lovely.
Yeah,
thank you.
That's exactly what we hope people will say about the cider. So we're making ciders for the table. So these are not kind of long drinks. They're quite high in alcohol. This is 7%.
I wouldn't know that.
That's good.
Mm. That's interesting. It's not. I don't have the heat on it or anything like that. Yeah.
Because I think, well, certainly I've come from a wine trade background, so not making wine, but I was a wine buyer and a marketeer as well. So winemaking and winemakers have kind of influenced what we've done in a way of thinking, I think. So ciders for the table is a big thing. The acid levels that we have in our ciders are quite high for Herefordshire and England in general. Mm-hmm. I think here, though, these kind of acid levels are more normal, actually. But that kind of moorishness, the succulence you get from acid is mm-hmm. great for
Very different kind of UK cider.
Yeah.
So it surprised me.
Mm. Great.
I was expecting one thing, so I'm not getting that that kind of dough kind of walking through, you know, to the farmhouse kitchen at all. This is a clean cider.
It's a wild yeast ferment. So, and we didn't use any sulfur dioxide in the process up until the point of bottling, where we did use a little bit of sulfur dioxide.
Interesting.
It's pure juice cider. So there's nothing else in it. So
we're really, really, really intent on waiting for the apples to ripen. I mean, even more so each year. So we don't. We've only got 120 trees. We are going to be partnering with other orchards nearby as we grow, which we're looking forward to doing. But we won't pick a row at a time. We'll pick a tree at a time, mm-hmm. and then we let them. And we probably chuck away a fair bit, don't we?
Yeah, we're really. I mean, the fruit selection is the really. Timing of harvest and fruit selection is really, really important to us. Mm-hmm. And then there's an aging process as well. So we age them off the tree for sort of 2 to 6 weeks, depending on the variety, mm-hmm. before they go to press. And then at press, there's another check to eliminating bad fruit. So it's only perfect fruit that's going to the press.
We don't mind ugly fruit.
Yeah.
That's not a problem.
Yeah, it's not a visual thing.
It's
fruit with integrity, you know, that are mm-hmm. that are in good condition, so no.
But there's an amazing time. So we store our fruit in what used to be a stable. So you open the stable door, and the most amazing smell emerges. Mm. It just is incredible. Mm. And then whenever you're pressing the juice, and we've been so lucky because it's been friends and family that have helped us with the picking and then the pressing, and then all the way through to the bottling. And whenever they come along, and if they have yet to try cider or yet to make cider, it's that moment when they see the juice coming off. It's just amazing.
Cool. A moment of, cool. of excellence, right, at that feeling. Yeah. You know, I want to say, while I'm drinking this, it so surprised me, because I didn't really know what to expect from your cider. And you are stepping out of the box here from a classic kind of UK cider. There is no doubt here. And I have to admit, I feel like this would be something that would be nice to drink with Eric Bordelais, because this is a little bit what he is doing with cider, is not just approaching it as that more kind of farm style, but like this. It's subtle.
Really kind
it's
of you
really
to say.
Subtle.
He's one of our inspirations. We have yet to meet him. We look forward to that. But we got his ciders early on, and they were the most at that time. They were the most expensive ciders we ever bought. But they are incredible.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of minerality in these ciders here.
Yeah.
So your influence of your wine merchant background is shining through.
Yeah, I think it probably is coming through. You're right.
And, absolutely.
It's a very. I think these ciders are real. It's a real product of the orchard and the site that we're on.
Mm-hmm.
To me, I mean, when we first walked the orchard, it's like. And I've been in many vineyards around the world, and sometimes you walk into a vineyard, you think, well, this is a really special place for growing fruit.
Mm-hmm.
And when we walked into that orchard, and we've seen quite a few orchards in our search for a place.
Mm-hmm.
It was a special site for apples, and it's got a great exposure. It's got great soil.
But what is the soil like?
Soil is called Herefordshire red clay.
Okay.
So because the orchard is on M25 rootstock, so it's there's a big trees.
Mm-hmm.
The trees are pretty big, so they need a lot of water. So the soil holds the water, but it drains pretty well as well.
Mm.
So
do you have to irrigate at all?
No, it's all dry farm.
Or
wet farmed, as
right.
We get a lot of rain. You know, we get a good rainfall in Herefordshire. Yeah.
No worries about rain over, so, aren't we? Bring your wellies.
So we need the soil to hold moisture, but not to be wet.
Okay.
So it drains well enough.
Yeah.
And we have a breeze that kind of constantly flows through the orchard up the slope. Mm-hmm. And that's great for keeping down a lot of the sort of fungal diseases and stuff. So it's a great mm-hmm. site for growing apples. And that's why when Mark Murray, who planted the orchard, and I've met him, and I asked him why he planted this piece of land, and he said he just thought it was a great piece of land for an orchard, and he was right.
Set it up for you to come in, little Pomona.
So we got really lucky, actually.
So how is this being received in your local area?
Yeah, it's been really, actually everything we've done so far, it's been a surprise, and we're really, really grateful and lucky. People kind of dig them, actually. I mean, not everyone, because they're not easy drinking styles. They're really positive in their flavor profile, mm-hmm. and there are some people who just can't get on with stuff that is this dry. But by and large,
I think while we're dry, there's the fruit there to balance
there's a lot
it.
Of fruit
I think that's, and whenever we've had a chance to chat with people and explain it, then it's just lovely.
It so changes everything, yeah.
Our first real outing was at Hereford Indie Food Festival last year. And so there's food festivals everywhere, but this is just the second year for Hereford to have its own food festival. So it's a bunch of young kids, really. And so we were so excited to be able to be part of it. Mm. And we did our stall, and they wanted it all, looking quite natural, and we're there. And then you start pouring, and then you start chatting. And it was, it was really great. Someone brought a bunch of them from an hour and a half away to come and taste it. So social media has really helped us, I have to say.
Yeah, keeping it alive.
Yeah.
And yet, there's been some decline, like some shops that are closing in the West Country, right? Different cider shops.
There was a three county cider shop in Ledbury, and that closed recently, which is very sad. I really loved that shop, actually, because that was on our kind of initial trips to Herefordshire. We'd always go there and buy some cider.
It's a key shop, and it is interesting speaking to them about why they closed. So it's absolutely beautiful shop. Initially set up Simon Day, Once Upon a Tree, and then they formed the Cider Corps, which Tom Oliver was part of it. Mm-hmm. It was four of them, the really best producers. But the nature of the times, all this online shopping. So actually footfall went down, average spend went up, which it would. You'd go in that shop and it's just magic. So we were thrilled when they helped, launch our cider. And one of our best tastings was when we went there one Saturday morning, wasn't it? It was really, really lovely. So it is a shame, but...
Are there farmer markets? And because they do that a lot here in the US, have tasting at farmer markets.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are markets dotted around, absolutely, yeah. And a lot of them are very well established, and they have their kind of group of producers who go there every month or every week or whatever it is. But yeah, there's more appearing around, and not just in the county, in all cities and stuff like that.
I think the future is probably cider in beer shops and cider in wine shops. And that's what we're finding. One of our most recent requests was from Birmingham, and he's a great little bottle shop and bar. And he was wanting to up his cider game. Mm. He was very honest. It was absolutely lovely to go and see him. I can't remember, what's the name of the
Clink.
Shop? Clink. Yeah, Clink. Clink. Really lovely. I want to go back there without my car.
Right.
And but he's absolutely sweet, and he's taken the two without actually tasting them. He took the punt. So I think that's the way. And then also the fun bit, we're seeing our ciders in, there's another great shop in London, Hop Burns and Black. Really brilliant, run by a couple of Kiwis, and so it's beer, the hop, the Burns, they do hot sauce, they've got a whole wall of hot sauces, it's brilliant, and then black vinyl. So we're in there, but what I love about our positioning there is we are the shelf below the natural wines, so people are seeing other links.
Yeah, all over the map.
Yeah, we don't need to be in isolation.
Uh-huh.
So
that's hopeful then, because, you know, looking at it from afar, you think, okay, what is going on with the UK cider market? Mm-hmm. And it does feel like, from my vantage, that there's kind of very defined script of the real cider piece that's coming out of the UK, predominantly. In terms of you can't add anything else. And of course, being in the US here, it's just like, oh, what else? Can I have that pen that you're writing in? I'm going to dip it in there, you know, into it. You know, whatever, let's try it. I was kind of curious, coming over here and coming to, we're at the United States Association of Cider Makers, their annual conference called CiderCon, which is a collection of makers from around the world, but predominantly the US. Is this what you expected, or is it unique?
Good question.
It's absolutely unique.
Definitely, yeah. I've not seen anything like it before. It's really good. In terms of this, I mean, we arrived on whenever it was Tuesday night, so Wednesday was the first day, and we went to the big tasting, and that was, as you say, there was like, you know, lots of different ciders there of all, you know, different side, lots of different flavorings and stuff like that, and a real kind of energy in the room, and that was very cool. And I like the fact that there was quite a few growers there who were really kind of involved with the cideries. That was really not something you would see in the UK.
The orchardists.
Wow. I thought that was really nice to see, because the orchardists in the UK tend to be very much in the background, so you wouldn't see them pouring ciders.
But you do have a lot of makers who are also orchardists, right? They're orchard-based cider, is how I'd call that.
But no, just the guys producing fruit to be involved at these sort of tastings. Mm-hmm. So that was really interesting. So bringing the personality of the grower as well as the maker to the fore, that was cool. But having said that, we were in the Heritage Cider
workshop
today, and they were talking about a lot of the things that are being talked about, the sort of the identity of cider, where it fits into the market. All these kind of discussions are kind of running parallel with both markets. Mm-hmm. And some of the Nielsen stats I saw, just, you know, the identical sort of breakdowns to the UK. So it's curious that you've got this very, very old industry and a much newer one here, but they're kind of, a lot of the conversations are the same and a lot of the patterns of sales are the same.
Yeah,
it's interesting. I wasn't expecting that. So.
I'm finding it exciting and inspiring, and it's absolutely wonderful to be able to speak to so many cider makers and people that you've heard about, and then to get to taste their ciders. So, I was warned by several people that it's just going to be a complete blast, and it has been. So. But I was just thinking what you were saying about where cider is. Another fun bit near us, and our cider is in the Cider Museum in Hereford. And I cannot recommend that place highly enough. Mm. It's relatively small. It's not going to be a whiz-bang science museum or anything like that. But it's absolutely, it's beautiful, and it shows the history. So one of the rooms you go past when you arrive, you go past a huge wooden old press. I mean, I don't know, 100, 200 years old. Absolutely. Yep. And then you go in, and then there's the lovely little cafe on the side and the shop and loads of bottles, and you resist going and looking at all the bottles. And you go past, and then there's some nice, simple, inviting tree images and things for the kids. And then you go through some doors into this room with glass cabinets, and you're seeing the cut glass decanters and glasses from the 17th and 18th century, when cider was the drink of nobility and on the tables of royalty. And then you begin to get a sense of where it has been and where it can go. So
what happened there, if I can interrupt you? If it was a cider was really on the table of the royalty, what happened?
I think the way it went was it was also the drink of the worker as well, the drink of the farmer and everything like that. And I think perhaps as wine came in and wine kind of took its place on the dining table and things like that, so cider was taking a back seat. At various times when we were, I think when we've been at war with the French, cider's mm-hmm. come back. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But there's...
Yeah, I think there's historical fluctuations depending on yeah. which nation the UK was fighting with at the time.
Okay, fair enough.
So, but yeah. there's been a bit of a resurgence. So, again, mm-hmm. Simon Day, who we've mentioned, he saw a place for cider on the dining table. And that's what he deliberately started out to make. He partnered with this beautiful orchard called Dragon Orchard, which you would just love.
I was just drinking some, I think.
Oh, are you?
Yeah, but is that...
I think it...
Was it tasting here?
This orchard is just wonderful, and it even has an amphitheatre, so you can wander around. Mm. There's poetry's been written about it. Mm. And
lovely.
You can, so you get a feel mm. for yeah. it. So we're reimagining where cider is and
yeah,
can be.
Kind of, yeah, I think part of the reason why we ended up making cider in Herefordshire was just wondering what could happen to the apple if you stripped out the kind of modern toolbox of the cider makers. So, you know, once you strip out the water and added sugar and other things, you know, how good could the liquid be if you approached it differently? So I'm not so. So we're just at the very beginning of that journey to see how far we can push the quality of the stuff that comes out mm-hmm. of our orchard. Mm-hmm. But you know, so far, and you asked what reception was like from people. It's been really good. So I'm thinking that maybe we, mm-hmm. hopefully, we can improve on what we're doing now and continue to show.
You're on the right track. Yeah, you're on the right track, which is affirming. Yeah, because yeah, I mean, you're a relatively new cidery, so. Revisiting this like 5 years from now, I have a feeling that this is going to continue to become more balanced and balanced and deeper, because it's you have to get used to the terroir, you have to get used to the equipment. You think it's easy, but there's so much learning that just happens in a short amount of time.
Absolutely,
and
yeah.
You know, this is a nice cider, and I wonder how long it's been conditioned for. What are you going for there?
Well, that took about 22 months to get into bottle.
22 months
from pressing.
Okay.
So
it was a slow ferment, though, wasn't it?
It's a slow ferment.
Yeah, ferment was pretty slow. Yeah, and
so,
and
wait,
also
what year is it?
2015. So we released it. We released it in
mid
July.
Yeah. So the Montatan is in here and stuff. I mean, this is something that I'd like to try. You know. Next year, the next year, and just kind of see how it mellows out, because I'm wondering what your thoughts are on it. It's hard to say because, you know, you're kind of new to this particular one, but when do you think it would be the kind of perfect time for this? Because that's part of learning, as you know, with wine. Like, is it young, or is it...
I think it's got the kind of structure to age pretty well, but aging cider, no one really knows how long it's going to take, but it's got really bright fruit, lots of fruit, got great acid, mm-hmm. and it's got a good tannic structure, so
yes,
there's no reason why it can't age pretty well for a few years. I would think so.
Yeah. This is something that I would think like 2 years from now,
yeah.
it would have like a certain smoothness that I'm kind of feeling like it's a little young a little bit, which is nothing wrong with it. It's very drinkable, but I just think that the tannin would kind of like meld in with a way that would kind of drop down.
We should have brought some cheese along. That's what we often do.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Well, there's a great local cheese, Hereford Hop, so that's rolled in, hop.
Yeah. Right.
And that's a lovely match, and we often do that when we're sharing, don't we?
Yeah.
I think it's...
Yeah, so in terms of aging, I think we're probably the only people who know, because it's going to be gone soon.
It's going to be gone soon, I know. I hope you could hold a couple of bottles. With some of the makers who, you know, I've mentioned, that one individual maker, you know, I've done some tastings over the years with those bottles with him, and we're talking about Eric again, and he is one who does age his ciders, and so your tannins are so complex here that... I would think that this would be a cider that hasn't actually. I'm gonna throw this.
Right,
out
we're taking it off sale.
I'm kind of a novice. I mean, seriously. I mean, you know, that's just my palate, which is just me. I know that this will go well with food.
Yes.
But let's face it, when ciders are being judged, they're often being judged without food.
Yep.
Very
you're having
true.
A little bit of bread and stuff like that, and then, you know, those folks who are really cider connoisseurs, they are going to drink this straight up. And my sense is that this is one that I would age, because you have really complex tannins in here in a way that we don't see in cider too often in bottles.
Yeah.
So it's a very unique style that you're doing, and I'm excited for you, based upon that.
It's cool. It's like it goes back to kind of cidernomics. So you know, keeping something for 22 months before releasing it is quite long in the cider world.
It's a long time, especially when you're starting out.
Yeah, so the thought of keeping it another couple of years before releasing it, that's...
it's kind of impossible.
But, we need to rely on people like you or other people to buy it and lay it down like they would
exactly.
wine.
Exactly.
Yeah? So we'll do that. So we'll be able to...
Yeah, we will.
We'll see how the evolution of it goes over the next 5 to 10 years,
I mean, you know quite well. If you know anything about wine, it's going to really age on. I think that cider does cellar well.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you're kind of hitting upon a particular cider style that is in that realm that could compete against the wine.
Right.
Aficionado in that way, because
that's good to hear.
It has complexity.
Yeah, I mean, we were influenced by the thinking of winemakers, and they think a lot about layering flavors and the balance and the acid and the tannic structure. So we're not using grapes, obviously, but you know, we've given that same sort of type of thought to what we're doing. So,
you know, right now, it's a cider that I would want to have some food with it, and I would drink it alone too, of course. But I imagine, I'm just again putting this out as you go along, and have it kind of cellar a little bit. It might become the cider where you just want to drink it,
with
nothing else.
Yeah.
And that is a realm in Ciderville and what people and makers are doing that they don't quite always look at. But that's where cider can compete with wine at a whole other level. It's not just, you know, drinking in the pint and kicking it back.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to do that with the cider by any means.
A lot
of depth there.
We generally recommend serving it in wine glasses.
Of course.
And we're not trying to be elitist. We're simply trying so that we kind of get the idea to kind of see how it, see the aromas and the tastes and things like that.
Yeah, a good wine glass is a cool way to drink it, because it, you know, the shape of the glass...
helps
the aromatics and stuff.
Absolutely.
So
may we tempt you with the next one,
please? Yeah. Yes.
You could pour away into here.
I'll drink it.
Yeah, drink it.
That's the rain. So this one, we have two choices of serve. We have someone. We went to this lovely restaurant in Birmingham, Carters of Moseley. They have a phrase which is shake it. Shake it to wake it.
Shake it to wake it. Okay.
So, because we have sediment in here.
So you've got a choice then.
Yeah. Which
so
way
we can,
would you
we can
like
shake it?
It
to wake it, or we can just pour it.
Shake it to wake it.
You want to do that?
Excellent. Good stuff. I love that.
This is where we make a mess of your table when we open it.
Oh yeah. I better be careful here. Just open it gently.
Yeah, it's good. It's good.
So this is the unicorn. And whoa, it's live.
Okay, come on, get it off.
I'm gonna no. I'm going slowly. There we are.
So we're shaking it to waken it.
Yes, and we do truly have a lovely cloudy.
Got it. So if we don't shake it, obviously it pours clear until you get to the bottom. So you've got two different steps, really.
Right.
So so it's cool.
Oh, I'm so glad that you shook that.
Yes,
I'm really glad.
You like that? Yeah.
And so well done on how you opened that, which is a little tip for Ciderville. You know, she, I want to say James kind of tipped it upside down. So just to give you a visual, he didn't shake it like, you know, you're.
Miraculous.
Ready to throw the dice across to the poker table or whatever. Just kind of went head over with the bottle, and then Susanna opened it, but didn't just pop off the lid. And I think that's a good trick that you do when you're worried about it kind of busting out. So you don't have any, you don't want to waste any of this precious liquid. And it comes out, it's now it's like a cloudy cider, kind of like a apricot.
Yes, sort of orangey mandarin.
Yeah, orange.
And now we're getting that more kind of quintessential UK style of that yeast, that terroir.
Yeah, and these are just only two varieties in this, so that, and it's 91% Dabernet, which is a real classic bittersweet, and 9% Harry Masters Jersey, which is again another late harvest bittersweet apple. So that's so that's a really classic.
How
would you describe the Harry Masters Jersey as an apple? It's a lovely sort of bittersweet. It's, a, it's like a friendly apple.
I think it's a cool apple. It's got, in our site, it's got good acid, got great tannins, and it's got really high aromatics as well. So there's a real honeysuckle thing. So when you're aging them in the crates in the stable and you go in, it's a big aroma of honeysuckle you get. Mm-hmm. And some of that, I get it in here, but maybe that's just me, but it goes through the process and remains. So it's cool.
Yeah, there's the tannins here are really straightforward again. I'm not sure how much that is residual from the old man and the bee, but you have like apples that most of us would bend over backwards to get. You could really tell you have a nice variety of apples, and
we love the Dabernet. We love them all. It's
I really like Dabernet. It's a great. I mean, it's just the stuff that we get. It's just got the tannins are great right from the off. Acid levels are not as high as they are in Foxwell Perellis Bitter, but they're still there. They're still present. And the sugars are great. You get a lot of sugar. And if you pick them at the right time, you get really great flavour development as well.
That's what I love. I love the complexity. And that's where almost we are. We're a little bit at the beginning of the old journey, seeing how things go. And that's where we're learning. So here at CiderCon, the chance to speak with Charles McGonagall and hearing various things about what's in apples and things like that. Yeah. And but also just then thinking about the texture. And this has got a lot of texture, this cider.
It does. Yeah. Wow.
So you kind of got the breadth and the depth, and then the sort of, it's almost like marmalade-y, tangerine-y, a bit of citrus in there. And then there's a little bit of a herbal undertone.
There is like a kind of minty, cool, herbal thing. Yeah. There's a bit of funk in it as well. It's got a bit of funk in it.
Mm-hmm. The natural sparkle. But as I say, it was a natural Kiev, so with no
spontaneous Kiev, which was cool. So
what are you going to do for the next unicorn?
There may never be another unicorn.
I will not believe that. But
not in 2017.
So
we didn't get any spontaneous Kievs this year. This harvest. So what are
you looking at for this coming year, 2018? What are you going to be putting in bottles? And
the next, we've got two things to put in the bottle. There's one called Art of Darkness, which is a Ellis Bitter predominantly with a bit of Foxwell and Harry Master Jersey in it. And that's been 12 months in tank, 12 months in oak, and about 7 months in bottle. So that's looking pretty cool.
Yeah. Wow.
To restart, there's one called Ceci Bonbon, which is which was a blend of mainly Dabernet, but some of the other three apples as well. And we fermented that in a bourbon cask. Wow. Then we racked it into 25-liter glass bonbons, or carboys, you guys call them?
Yes. You call them bonbons?
In France.
Oh, okay. Yeah. B-O-N.
B-O-N.
B-O-N. Because we eat bonbons here.
Yeah.
Yes.
In France, these glass things are called bonbons.
Yeah.
So you see them in south of France. And that's, I really like it. It's really cool. So you've got this fermentation of barrel, really active. And then you've got this anaerobic maturation process in glass. So they're topped right up, bunged up, so there's no air getting in there. And it's It's, well, you'll have to test it when you come over.
Yeah, you will.
It's going to be cool.
Yeah, wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, you got some really unique ciders. Little Pomona is on the path to continued greatness. I know that you have been getting some good feedback on your ciders, right?
Yeah, we have.
Yeah, we're really lucky.
It's been just thrilling to be able to share them here at CiderCon with everyone we've had a chance to meet.
Yeah.
So we're thrilled, and I mean, we're hoping to grow, but we will stay.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. What's your 5-year plan here? We're in 2018 right now, so we're looking 5 years, so like
I think
2023, oh my goodness.
Yeah, I mean, our ambition is to grow the production, and at the moment we're below 7,000 litres a year, which is the tax threshold in the UK, but we want to grow the business to somewhere between 30 and 40,000 litres a year, so it's still boutique, but ciders are pretty premium priced, so we think if we can maintain that, then we have a kind of viable business, and we can maintain the kind of ethos and quality of what we're doing.
And I could taste that in your cider. Like there is deep intention here. This is not a cider to take lightly. If you're going to drink Little Pomona, you want to step back and savor it and take time with each one, because this is very unique. I'm a little kind of, I'm not speechless, because I talked to myself, my goodness, two people in front of me, and that changes everything. But I did not expect this.
Well, we're so thrilled to share it with you.
Wow.
Yeah,
wow.
We really, really are.
Well,
it's fun.
The feeling is mutual. So in terms of getting your cider, do you have to come to Herefordshire?
We're
if you land in London,
yes.
London's good.
London's good.
Okay.
Yeah.
So where would you find it in London?
There's quite a few places. So we have a distributor in London called Fine Cider Company, which is run by a guy called Felix Nash. He's really been a champion for
cider.
Fine cider in the UK.
Yes.
He's done a great job. So we've got it in quite a lot of different shops and restaurants in London.
Borough Wines and Beers is one of the main ones. There's about 9 or 10 branches of them, and they've been supportive right from the start. It's so lovely when.
Good.
So I've known Mitch there through beer and beer writing and the Guild of Beer Writers and everything like that. And he knows Herefordshire. Coincidentally, he also spent time out there running a pub in days of old.
Mm-hmm.
So he straight off asked to taste our cider early on, which, you know, when you're in when you're just starting out, that's been great. And then since then, places like you're saying, Hot Burns and Black and everything like that.
But no, we've distribution, we're really lucky. So we're up in Scotland in Glasgow and the Good Spirits Company, and they're very cool, big supporters. And as far south as Brighton in McKernel and Hove. So, you know, we've got kind of for a small cidery, we've got quite widespread distribution. It's cool.
Well, that leads me to a little bit of your work as Drink Britain, because you have to, I could relate to that being a beer writer, and I've written about both beer and wine, and so you have a certain bird's eye view that the average cider maker wouldn't, which I have a feeling probably is very handy with Little Pomona. So from that perspective and your work there, and can we just talk a little bit about
that'd be
what
lovely.
You're doing?
Yeah.
Why don't you tell us what your role is there and how long you've been Drink Britain?
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I was originally a science journalist. My degree is physics. So I was science journalist and media and PR.
Are you kidding me? Okay, all right.
And then along the way, I just got really interested in wine. And I think it was time in Australia years ago. Mm. And so I kind of segued into wine. I wanted to learn about it. So I went to work for Odbin's, which is a great little chain, an eclectic chain of wine shops. But it's big on the education. So you get to learn. You get staff tastings and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, that's where I met James years ago.
I was wondering. That sounds...
Yeah.
Yep. That was the beginning.
and then I got back into the media, which was my aim. And then when I went freelance, I did a feature on English wine tourism. And this is back in the noughties, if you like, so before English wine was big. But that's partly because my mum's cousin had been managing director of Chapel Down Winery back in the 90s. So we had exposure early on. And actually, I think our second date, we went to Chapel Down Winery.
Did, yeah.
Yeah.
You do remember that, James.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
I think so.
You know, people don't think of, like, UK wine.
No, they don't.
I just had that conversation where I was saying, just somewhere in CiderCon. So, but there is a market.
It's grown. And back in 2009, I did a feature on English wine tourism. So I was probably early there. Yeah. So, and that's obviously influenced by the amazing wineries you go visit in America and things like that. But it was early days. So then I thought, let's go and having been around the country a bit, let's go and look at beer and cider. How difficult can that be? Not realizing what I was getting into, because it's so exciting, as you know, as a fellow beer writer.
Right.
So dynamic, and the people you meet and everything like that. So that's when I got the idea to do Drink Britain, which was the first drinks tourism website in the UK to bring all drinks under one roof. So if you're interested in food, you're not just interested in, I don't know, cheese or pork. You're interested in the world. So the same with drinks and flavour. So Drink Britain kind of gave me a wonderful reason to travel, and I think our summer holidays ended up just going around the country and
tasting, which has to inform the product that you're making here with Little Pomona, because you know what's out there in the market. I mean, you're creating a certain brand here that is standing out. I mean, I haven't really gone to Britain to taste in this way, so maybe there are other cideries doing this, but I haven't really tasted it.
I don't know, we kind of wanted to make a unique style, but we're very much led by what's coming out of the orchard, so because we're not intervening in the process other than
time.
Well, we're choosing which containers to ferment it and to age in and how to blend them together. Yeah,
you know, you're doing something here that's
I think it's mainly in the assembly of the blend. That's where we're having the most influence, and also choosing which containers to ferment in.
Is this something that you do mutually, or is one of you more the maker than the other?
James is absolutely in charge of the cider making. I'm like sous chef there.
Yeah.
But in terms of tasting and when you're doing the blending, and we absolutely do that together.
Yeah.
So
we taste together, and then I decide what to do.
Well, that's a perfect what a perfect match.
I'm joking. We tend to do the blending together, I think sometimes I'll come up with a series of things that I think are okay, and then we'll look at them and decide where to go from there.
I have had the good fortune as well through the writing side. I'm the Beer Insider editor for Imbibe magazine, which is a magazine for the on-trade, so for buyers and pourers in bars and restaurants and things like that. And that's been a great opportunity to witness what's happening there, but also hopefully to share some of what the way the cider world can go. But I've also had a good chance to judge at competition. So I used to run a wine competition, or help run a wine competition, but judging ciders, so I've been lucky enough to judge at the Bath and West on the international section and at various others. So to witness what is around is a great opportunity, as you say.
It certainly is. And we have to mention that you just received a big award for your writing. Can we talk a little bit about that?
And
that just happened in 2017.
Yes.
Right? Seems like yesterday.
Yeah, I was absolutely thrilled and honored to be awarded the best trade writer at the British Guild of Beer Writers. And What's great?
We're hitting the drums here and hitting the horn. That's huge.
It was
really huge. As a woman writer too, in a pretty predominantly, I'm not sure what it's like in the UK, But in my realm, in the States, it could be an anomaly to be a woman writer in the culture of libations. So that's really, really something. Bravo.
Thank you very much. It was an amazing evening. I was shortlisted. To be shortlisted, I was just thrilled. But
so they tell you that you're shortlisted.
Yes. So you know
you
that.
You show up at this
lovely dinner.
Gala affair.
Yeah. And what was fun is I'd also been involved in doing the beer pairings for the dinner. So that was a great thing. And then when they're reading, out and everything, the two people I was shortlisted with, both of them also won an award, and one of them went on to win the overall Beer Writer of the Year. So it was amazing, and it was sponsored by Fuller's, and so it's called the London Pride Trade Writer of the Year. So and they give you an amazing tankard.
Oh my goodness!
And so guess what? And then they insisted on putting.
She will only drink out of that tankard.
She will. I mean, just what does it say? Susanna Forbes on top. Let's have like a little plate on it.
It's just. And then I was drinking London Pride out of this tankard. It was But it was really lovely because I'd had a chance to share some really fun features in Imbibe magazine, and so. And they have a great, the editor's really, really fun. He wants a trade magazine to be read because people want to read it.
So, and it's hard copy and online.
Thank you.
Well, congratulations. That is no small feat to be able to cover the world of libations at that level. Mm-hmm. Takes a lot of chutzpah, a lot of depth and knowledge. So, bravo.
Thank you very much.
I was going to give you a little clink of the glass.
Yeah, got that.
Cheers.
Cheers. Well done.
If you're not thirsty yet, well, here's a little bit more to wet your whistle and think about Little Pomona. Their Art of Darkness, it's a 2015, I'm going to say vintage. It is actually available in the Swedish market. So you could check that out if you are based in Sweden. I know we have Swedish listeners. It's also being released at the London Wine Fair coming up on May 22nd. And they're going to be at the stand DB15. I'll put that in the show notes. And then another cider too called C'est Bonbon. We were talking about that during the chat. That was produced from apples in 2016, and that's a single barrel bottling. So, wow, exciting. In July, they will be releasing their first Perry called Perry Coma, aged in a single barrel. It's a Petnat style from a 2017 vintage, and the fruit came from a very ancient orchard close to Dymock in Gloucester. I should know how to say that. We have one of those here in Massachusetts too. And in August, they also release another Petnat, which is going to be a 95% blend of Debonnet and 5% Ellis Bitter from the 2017 harvest. And that is called For Those About to Rack. James writes that it's loud and proud and will knock your socks off. I have no doubt about that. So everything is or will be available through Felix at the Fine Cider Company, who distributes their ciders throughout the UK. And thank you once again, Susanna and James Forbes. This podcast is supported by the good folks who are part of the Cider Chat Patreon page. You could become a patron too by just going to Patreon. And a large tip of the glass to Jake Mann of Five Mile Orchard, who just so happened to make a very kind donation to Cider Chat this past week. Thank you very, very much. Jake writes that he is appreciative how this podcast weaves the world's cider people together with your incredible spirit, curiosity, and personality. That certainly has to be Perry Pear. Oh, yeah. Well, those talking palms, they take a lot of credit for that. We're extremely fortunate to have you shining a light on our daily pursuits and connecting it all to others out there. What a community. You are so right, Jake Mann. 5 Mile Orchard out in Watsonville. you also connect the community too. You should know about this guy. He and his family, they have a long tradition of orchard care, and it's what a time for California in that way, and the U.S., because there's a lot of history there. And he's not only just kind of loving the apple trees, because just to walk with this guy out in the orchard, you could feel his passion for it, but also the makers. It is a collective community of amazing people up there in Northern California, and I feel very privileged to know them. If you want to hear Jake's episode, check out 113. I'll put a link in the show notes to it. Yeah, you know, I have a big heart in California, no doubt. But the thing about Ciderville, the heart reaches everywhere around the world. So it is such a privilege to be part of it. Thank you, thank you, thank you. A zillion million times, like all the apples on the tree out there. This is Rhea Windcaller signing off for now. Looking forward to seeing you in Ciderville.
Going up, going up, going up.
Yeehaw!